Blaze Radio Network.
And now, Chewing the Fat with Jeff Fisher.
Yum, yum. For more than, I don't know, I mean, they claim in this story for more than a decade. It's been quite some time. People have been told to eat bugs, and we've documented that on this show, and I've documented it on many other shows as well, that they continue to say, well, we need to eat bugs, and we need to eat bugs because it will help our carbon footprint. Will it? Well, now researchers are advocating for humans to increase consumption of snakes. Yeah, snakes. No, thank you. I do not want to eat snakes. I do not like snakes, Sam I am. I don't like spiders and snakes. So research published in Scientific Reports, which, I mean, is a great publication, noted that python farming appears to offer tangible benefits for sustainability and food systems resilience. So you can be a python farmer. Man, does that sound like fun. So python farming can not only complement existing livestock systems, but may offer better returns in terms of production efficiencies. This is an alternative to livestock that needs to be taken seriously. And the lead author said, we're not necessarily saying everyone should stop eating beef and turn to pythons. No, of course not. But there needs to be a conversation about them having a more prominent place in the agriculture mix. No, thank you. I'm good. He goes on to say climate change, of course, disease, and diminishing natural resources are all ramping up pressure on conventional livestock and plant crops, with dire effects on many people in low-income countries already suffering from acute protein deficiency. Oh, okay. Now, this is from the Dr. Daniel Natush, N-A-T-U-S-C-H, who is an honorary research fellow at the Macquarie School of Natural Sciences. He went on to say, no other livestock species studied to date possesses the same credentials of rates of production as pythons. Okay, all right, calm down. Let's remember that pythons don't just eat grass. We feed them, I don't know, rats. But I guess that doesn't matter according to the doc, and it's worthwhile food security and global food insecurity is brought on if we don't eat pythons. And pythons on farms most commonly eat wild caught rodents. Yeah, that's correct. They do. Waste protein from agri-food supply chains, pork, chicken, and fish. Do they eat the waste protein from these food supply chains? And python farms control rodent populations. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a fan of that. I don't necessarily want to eat the snakes after they eat the rats, but I'm okay with as many snakes eating the rats as possible. No, thank you. And according to this, pythons rapidly grew to slaughter weight within their first year. And there are far fewer greenhouse gases than traditional livestock. That's wonderful. And so just be prepared for this coming down the old pike that we need to all eat snakes. And this specifically pythons. So if you're looking to become a farmer and you don't know what you want to farm, hey, you can become a python farmer. No, thank you. Now, they claim that snake tastes like chicken if prepared well. Does it? Welcome to Chewing the Fat. So I'm reading this story over the weekend about a British warship that's been identified off the Florida coast nearly three centuries after it sank while on patrol in the waters, what is now the Dry Tortugas National Park. The HMS Tiger, T-Y-G-E-R, went down with hundreds of sailors on board. It's a fascinating story. The surviving crew were marooned on an uninhabited island for more than 2 months before making a dramatic escape on makeshift boats. So they found this ship back in 1993, and now new research by archaeologists has confirmed definitive evidence that the wreck is indeed the 50-gun frigate HMS Tiger, and that was reported by the National Park Service. It was also reported in the recently published International Journal of Nautical Archaeology. And man, when I actually would probably like to read a little bit from the International Journal of Nautical Archaeology because it's fascinating to me. So the ship sank back in 1742 and ran aground on the reefs of the Dry Tortugas during the Anglo-Spanish War, which was a 9-year conflict between Britain and Spain. Old logbooks described how the crew lightened her forward, presumably by offloading heavy equipment, after initially running aground, briefly refloating the vessel, and then sinking it. They found 5 cannons. They found a bunch of stuff in this original wreckage there in the waters. It'd be great to go scuba diving and snorkeling around down there. It'd be fascinating. And the story around this ship, the 300 crew members that were on board when it wrecked, there were survivors, and those survivors spent like 66 days marooned on an island of what is now Garden Key. And they built boats from the warship that they burned. So they salvaged pieces from the warship, and then they burned the rest of it so it didn't fall into enemy hands. But they battled the heat and the mosquitoes and thirst, by the way, and they escaped. And they took a 55-day journey through the waters, and they ended up in Jamaica. So they, you know, some of the ship crew survived. And so it was the first of 3 warships to sink off the Florida Keys, and they have previously identified the HMS Fowey, F-O-W-E-Y, and the HMS L-O-O-E. So, they claim that it highlights the importance of preservation and the place of future generations of archaeologists. I get all that. It was fine. I love it. And if you're asking yourself, I wonder why they call it the Dry Tortugas. Well, it's the Dry Tortugas. And according to legend, Ponce de Leon, you know him, you love him, in 1513, he named them the Dry Tortugas because of the large population of sea turtles living on the island's surrounding waters. Tortugas is turtle in Spanish. Ponce de Leon himself caught over 100 sea turtles during his time on the island. So he was eating the turtles. He didn't catch them. Ponce was like, we're hungry and there's a bunch of turtles and we're eating them. But that's why they call it the Tortugas. It later became the Dry Tortugas because there was no water. It was just the Tortugas there at the beginning. And then they were like, hey, there's no water here, so why don't we just call it the Dry Turtles? Okay. And because he wanted to warn people away from the island. Anyway, but the thing that really ticks me off about this entire thing, all right, as I'm reading the story, and I'm fascinated by it, and it's awesome. It'd be so cool to go scuba diving and snorkeling down there to see all this, to see the wreckage and see the preservation. I love looking at the pictures because I'm not going to be scuba diving. For some reason, they don't have a lot of fat guy scuba diving suits. But hey, that's just me. Now, the thing that ticked me off about this story, though, is that they talk about, look, the site is already protected under the cultural resource laws that apply to the Dry Tortugas National Park. But the positive identification of the HMS Tiger offers additional protection under the Sunken Military Craft Act of 2004. And who doesn't love the Sunken Military Craft Act of 2004? The remains of the HMS Tiger and its artifacts remain the property of the British government. No. No, I do not like that, Sam. I am. No, that belongs to us. Okay, you don't get to say, well, that belongs to the British government. If we're paying to make sure that it upkeeps, because look, There's a variety of natural and human threats, storms, erosion, all that stuff that we try to protect this area around the Dry Tortugas. We're paying for that from with our National Park Service and beyond, and I'm sure we're paying that somewhere in the Sunken Military Craft Act of 2004. No, if we're paying for it, it does not belong to the British government. Sorry. Now, if you're going to go down there and spend a little time down there and snorkel and scuba dive around the old Dry Tortugas, you might want to take the Jace case with you. You know, just in case. Just in case, Jace. Jace case. Go to jacemedical.com. You can enter the offer code Jeffy at checkout for a discount. But beside that, you need the Jace case. Remember when vital medications didn't get rationed in the United States? Yeah, you're not getting those days back. I mean, that used to be something that happened in other countries, but not here. But things just aren't that way anymore. That's one reason you need to have the Jace case on hand. It's a personalized emergency medication kit that contains five essential antibiotics that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. It's customizable with dozens of add-on medications available, so you can choose the ones that best fit you and your family's need. And they even have ivermectin as an add-on option. And you can get gift cards for your family or loved ones so that they can get and customize Jace cases for themselves. Jace is simple. You go online, fill out a form, and then you get the prescription. Life-saving medications delivered right to your door. The Jace case gives you that peace of mind that you're not just hoping to have access to medication in an emergency. You actually have it. JaceMedical.com. JaceMedical.com. JaseMedical.com. Don't forget to enter that offer code Jeffy at checkout for the discount on your order. Promo code Jeffy at JaseMedical.com. All right, let's go to the break room. I need something cold to drink desperately. Well, if you're thinking to yourself, I don't need to play the lotto. I mean, sure, the Mega Millions has $875 million jackpot that's going to be drawn on tomorrow, the 19th of March, 2024. Sure, the Powerball is going to have a drawing tonight, the 18th of March, 2024, for $645 million jackpot. I mean, both. I mean, the Mega is $413.5 million cash payout, and the Powerball is $307.3 million cash payout. And you're thinking to yourself, I don't really need to play that. Well, then you read a story about a restaurant in San Francisco. It's catching attention because it just bumped its signature burrito from $11 to $22. So it doubled, literally doubled, for the price of the burrito. Now, the owner of the restaurant says, look, everything I put in is fresh, and I wanted to have it be like it was the kind of food aunts and uncles and mothers used to make, but of course kicked up a notch. The only problem is he claims everything he uses to make his food has gone up. Yeah, no kidding. And he uses an example of onions. He said before COVID, they were like $9 a sack at Restaurant Depot. I used to pick them up. During COVID and after, it was $40. Right now, it's $80. How can companies survive? Their signature burrito is the most popular, and nearly every ingredient that goes into it has doubled in cost. Now, I mean, that's more than doubled. Hello. Well, double since COVID. I mean, think about what it was prior to that. Wow, just incredible. And look, food, gas, housing, all through the roof. Thanks to someone. Whose fault is it? I feel like it's Joe Biden's fault, but that's just me. It probably isn't. It's probably somebody else's fault. So he knows that, look, if people don't come, then I'll close my doors at one point. And you can go someplace and get a $9 burrito somewhere that's not even close to the size or as fresh and good as mine. But he can't survive with the prices that were. So prices are going through the roof. So that as an example may make you, I know it does me, want to play the lotto. I know about the odds, I get all that, but it sure would be nice to win $875 million jackpot or a $645 million jackpot. If you're not going to get all that money, if the cash payout is $413.5 million, what are you going to go home with, $200 million? I'm happy with that. Oh, if it's $300.7 million, what are you going to go home with, $150 million? I'm okay with that. I want that. Yes, please. That would be nice. But I'll let you know on my social media accounts. No problem. You can follow me on X at JeffyJFR. You can follow me on Facebook and Instagram, Jeff Fisher Radio. You can follow my YouTube channel, Chewing the Fat with Jeff Fisher. You can email the show anytime you want, chewingthefat@theblaze.com. And you can always order a cameo from me at JeffyJFR on the Cameo app. That is now, of course, not free. Sorry about it. That's just the way that works. You tell me over Cameo whether you want me to do the video happy, sad, glad, mad, mean, and I do it. And then, you pay the money and I do the bit and Cameo gets their cut and everyone is happy. That's how that works. Now, some people aren't happy, and that would be Don Lemon. We talked last week about how Don Lemon got the axe from X, or got the axe from Elon after his interview. He interviewed Elon, and he had signed, I don't know if they signed the deal or not. Maybe it was just a deal that they had not signed any contract yet. He was supposed to get paid from X to do a show on X. He can still do a show on X. He's just not getting paid from X to do a show anymore, unless he makes money as far as advertisers and people watching his show, just like other content creators, not a specific show paid for by X. Anyway, Elon was interviewed by him, and Elon said, yeah, he's not doing a show on X. He's terrible. So then we find out that he had all these extravagant asks from X to do a show on X. He wanted a $5 million upfront payment on top of an $8 million salary. He wanted an equity stake in the company. Right. He wanted to approve any changes on X policy as it relates to news content. Right. He wanted a free Tesla Cybertruck. I will say this, Elon, if you give me $5 million up front and an $8 million salary along with a free Tesla Cybertruck, I won't ask for any approval of X policy as it relates to news content. You can do that on your own. I don't need that. Now, again, I don't know that it was all signed. And, if that was just, a negotiating tactic from Don and his people, but I'm sure that did not happen. Now, I will say this, that a spokesman for X called Lemon's claim a disingenuous lie. Well, what claim would that be? Well, he claimed that if he held discussions over the summer when the company threatened to fire him if he did not attend the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, and he smoozed people there. X says that was a lie. I don't know what all is a lie and what isn't, what was, negotiation tactics or whatever. But look, Don Lemon knows that. Let me rephrase that. Don Lemon believes he is much better than he is. And he's been paid a lot of money to be a mouthpiece on CNN. And when Elon said, I'm not paying anymore, who did he go crying to? CNN. So maybe he and his boyfriend can just go away. I don't know if he'll get any money from Elon for giving him the boot and agreeing to contractual negotiations. I hope not. I hope not, but he probably will. And we'll see. We will find out. I mean, his people claim that nothing in the list of demands during the story, about the story, in the story, were true. So we'll see. We shall see. Someone else that needs a lot of money is Bruno Mars. I see where Bruno is said to owe MGM like $50 million in gambling debt. Now, he's had a residency at MGM for, 9 years. and they extended it for another 12 shows throughout this year, 2024. But that's probably because he has accrued gambling debt. He's just playing to gamble. He's showing up doing his Bruno Mars show just so he can gamble or pay off the debts that he already has. So there's a source that says he owes as much as $50 million to MGM. Now, he reportedly takes in $90 million a year as part of his deal with the casino, which ain't bad. You can't quote me on that. But after taxes, it means he's just barely covering the money owed. So, and he's spoken in the past about how much he loves gambling and that how he visited his first casino at 19. And when he was a still unknown musician, he was covering his rent by playing cars. So you can still see Bruno at the Park MGM starting in June. He's there, baby. And he sounds like Bruno will be there forever. Today. First, let's start with Shigeichi Nagishi. Wait, what? What'd you call me? Shigeichi Nagishi. He's the Japanese engineer credited with one of the greatest inventions of all time, the karaoke machine. He has passed away at the age of 100. Shigeichi Nagishi, dead at the age of 100. Now, he died back in January after a fall. We're just finding out about this now from his daughter. I don't know why we're finding out about it now, but we are. According to the family, he passed away from natural causes after a fall. I'm sure if it had anything to do with that, they would have mentioned it. Now, Shigeichi Nagishi, he invented, well, he called it the Sparko Box, named after the flashing lights within a later design of the machine. And he said he was credited with creating the machine. Now, there's another guy, this Dasuki Inoue, who was long thought to be the grandfather of karaoke, and his version was invented independently in 1971. Okay, because our man, Shigeichi Nagishi, this was in 1967. He said he was walking down the hall and one of his engineers said, you don't sing very well. And so he came up with a plan to add a microphone, a speaker, and a tape deck and have a song that he could sing along with. And then they gave it to family and kids and everybody loved it. And off they go. Now, he claimed that because it was so difficult to get a patent in the 60s in Japan, that he never worried about it. And so it never bothered him. And so he went around selling his wares. He said he sold about 8,000 of them. So, I mean, that's pretty good. I don't know what he was selling them for, but he sold them to bars and hotels and restaurants and other venues, everything he could think of. Said he'd sold about 8,000 devices. I don't know how many he had sold. But, I mean, when you think about, I mean, what a ripoff if he didn't get any of the money because it wasn't patented. I don't know if anybody gave him some money. I don't know if they had any kind of deal, but he doesn't matter now because he's dead. So rest in peace, Shigeichi Nagishi, dead at the age of 100. Then we have David Seidler. David Seidler, the Oscar-winning screenwriter behind the 2010's The King's Speech, has died. He was 86. The London native died during a fly fishing trip in New Zealand. I don't know how dangerous those fly fishing trips are in New Zealand, but this one definitely was. According to his manager, his guy, he was in the place that he loved most in the world, and he couldn't have scripted it any better. Yeah, because you always want to script your own death. Anyway, he did the King's Speech. He did. I mean, he was known for a lot. He did Tucker, Francis Ford Coppola's Tucker, The Man and His Dream, which I enjoyed that movie. Madeline, Lost in Paris, Quest for Camelot. he wrote a whole bunch of stuff, and he was still working. You know, he still had multiple documentaries and limited series and feature films in development as of his death. So rest in peace, David Seidler, dead at the age of 86 while fly fishing. And so I didn't realize. I can't get over the dangerousness of fly fishing. I don't know if he was fly fishing with friends and he got hooked and dragged into the water. I don't know. But rest in peace, David Seidler. Then we have Byron Janis. Byron Janis. I mean, this guy was the classical pianist who studied with Vladimir Horowitz, recorded previously unknown Chopin waltzes. He died Thursday at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. He was 95 years of age. It doesn't say what he died from. He was 95. I'm sure it was natural causes. If it was anything else, they would have said it. Am I right? So he had an incredible career. And when he started out playing xylophone, and then he and his mom moved to New York to study piano. His dad owned these Army-Navy stores in the Pittsburgh area in Pennsylvania and lost all but one of them during the Depression. So mom was like, all right, I'm taking the kids. We're moving to New York. And my man is going to study piano. You're not playing the xylophone anymore, okay? I like the xylophone and all, but we're going to make you study piano, which he did. So Horowitz saw Janis perform Rachmaninoff's Concerto No. 2 at a concert in Pittsburgh. And that's actually what made mom move him to New York, because Horowitz saw him play the Rachmaninoff's Concerto No. 2 and said, you know, I could teach you. And you play a bit in watercolors, but you could play more in oils. And so they went to New York and he trained under him. Just incredible. And he traveled the world. He's played for world leaders along with presidents. He traveled to Russia during the Cold War. The guy had an amazing life. And he composed scores for musical productions, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Hans Brinker. He had a great friendship between Gary Cooper and Ernest Hemingway. I mean, he was just an amazing musician and composer. And so rest in peace, Byron Janis, dead at the age of 95. You know, we spoke earlier about burrito ingredients going up in price, just like everything else in the world. Now we have very, very distressing news that cocoa prices are going up. Chocolate is going up. Wait, what? Yeah, it's going up through the roof. In fact, on Friday, benchmark cocoa futures surged to a record $8,018 per metric ton. That's a 25% increase last week alone, and 215% higher than last year. So if you think that chocolate bar is more expensive today, wait until tomorrow. Holy cow. The African cocoa processors, which are the big ones, take a raw cocoa and turn it into something usable for chocolate companies. And they no longer can afford to buy the beans. Wait, yeah, I know. Cocoa trees, and they only flourish in a narrow band around the equator. And that's why four West African countries, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Cameroon, and Nigeria, produce almost 75% of the globe's cocoa supply. Okay, Ivory Coast alone produces nearly half of the world's cocoa. But due to bad weather, bean disease, I mean, I am not a fan of bean disease, and a lack of investment in new trees. Why wouldn't you plant new trees? That's part of doing business. Anyway, I guess it stretches back decades. Recent cocoa harvests have been dreadful, resulting in this huge gap between supply and demand. The cocoa market will be short 374,000 tons this season. Up from a shortfall of 74,000 tons last season. You're in good luck eating anything chocolate, man, at a reasonable price, because that ain't happening. So as chocolate has transitioned from a luxury item to one that can easily be picked up before catching a movie. Yeah, it hasn't been a luxury item in a long time. Sorry to disappoint the person who wrote this story, but it's been an everyday kind of product for quite some time. So global demand has doubled in the last 30 years. Yeah, I bet it's even worse than that. But according to this, it's doubled. So prices for chocolate products in the U.S. grew 11.6% in 2023. And I would say because of this news, it's going to go up a lot more. So get your chocolate now. Not talking about hoarding chocolate, but might not be a bad idea. Sadly, it might not be a bad idea to hoard darn near anything. Oh, what are you, a prepper now? I kind of am. I'm not, but I should be. I feel bad about not being a prepper. But do I feel bad enough to become a prepper? Not really. Too lazy. If you are not a member of Blaze TV Plus, you need to make that happen. And if you are, you need to for sure watch Texas versus the Feds, how the elites use the border crisis against us. The description of the show is whatever happened to that Texas border standoff. You can join Jason Buttrell, who, by the way, is a co-host of our weekly show, Talking Walking Dead, as well, and the Blaze Originals team on a road trip with the Take Our Border Back convoy to the front line of the border crisis as they uncover what was really happening during Governor Greg Abbott's fight against federal agents. Our team reveals the story that the mainstream media didn't want you to know. The Originals team, the Jason and the Blaze Originals team, found an alarming way around the Texas National Guard border blockade to show viewers at home what is really going on. Texas versus the Feds, how the elites use the border crisis against us. I mean, it's a conservative estimate that 5.5 million people have illegally crossed into the U.S. in the last 36 months. And that itself is an all-time high, and it's a conservative estimate. I mean, I personally believe that it's more than that. Go to therealbordercrisis.com. Therealbordercrisis.com. Use the code BORDER, and you're going to get $30 off your Blaze TV Plus subscription. TheRealBorderCrisis.com. Use the code BORDER and get $30 off your Blaze TV Plus subscription. All right, so April 8th, we have a total solar eclipse. And March 25th, we have a lunar eclipse. Now, a solar eclipse occurs when a new moon is positioned precisely between Earth and the sun. So the moon casts its shadow on Earth. During a total eclipse, the moon fully covers the disk of the sun, offering the opportunity to view the sun's outer atmosphere called the corona. Got it. There's all kinds of places, weather permitting, on March 25th, we'll get the lunar eclipse, which starts about 12:53 a.m. before reaching its peak at 3:12 a.m. Now, there are counties in Texas and other places that are saying, hey, maybe we should have disaster declarations ahead of the eclipse because we need some more money coming in from the feds and the state because it's the perfect place to see the total solar eclipse. Oh, really? Yeah, it's the total place. So we're going to have, they tell people on their county's website, you should brace for traffic delays and crowds, as well as the possibility of delayed emergency response, interruptions to cell service, and issues with credit card machines due to the influx of people. So be ready if you're traveling anywhere to go to, say, like if you go to Travis and Kendall counties and Hayes County in Texas, be ready. They've already issued disaster declarations. Now, you can also become a citizens of science. So NASA says observing a solar eclipse is one of many ways to get in on the fun of doing science. You can get involved with NASA science by participating in a number of NASA-funded citizen science projects. And the citizen science projects are a collaboration between scientists and interested members of the public, like you. Through these collaborations, volunteers known as citizen scientists have helped make thousands of important scientific discoveries. Have they? So you can be part of the Sun Gazer project. You could be part of the Solar Jet Hunter. That's so you could join the hunt for solar jets. Enigmatic bursts of energy. Enigmatic bursts of energy from our own star, the Sun. Thank you. That's a solar jet hunter. Aurorasaurus. Hamsai. If you're a ham operator, help us understand Earth's ionosphere. Citizen Kate 2024. The DEB initiative with a small team, you can capture telescope images of the total eclipse to help document the moment-by-moment appearance of the Sun and its corona. Eclipse Mega Movie. You can use the DSLR camera to record dynamics in the solar corona during the total eclipse and help analyze the images afterward. Eclipse Soundscapes. Sun Sketcher. You can use your phone to help measure the exact shape and size of the Sun by photographing an eclipse phenomenon called Bailey's Beads. I'll let you go ahead and write your own jokes to that. There's also something called the Globe Eclipse. You can use Globe Observer, the app of the Globe program, and the thermometer to measure air temperature changes and monitor the clouds during the eclipse. So we're able to see the air temperature changes and monitor of the clouds during the eclipse around the world. For those of you that want to become citizen science and help NASA out during the solar and lunar eclipse. As you know, if you listen to this show, you know every Friday we do a game show called What's the Lie? It's America's favorite game show. And we have people emailing the show, chewingthefat@theblaze.com, to become a contestant on What's the Lie? And you can do that if you wish. This, however, is an email I received from someone who wants to become a contestant on What's the Lie? And he also sent a joke of the day. So this is an example of how you can become a contestant. Not just send me an email saying, hey, I want to be a contestant on What's the Lie, which I take and I appreciate. And we, you know, try to work out a time for you to be a contestant on What's the Lie. This, however, gets you in without question, leaving me the joke of the day along with the email. Greetings, Jeffy. As a retired professional killer and the current owner-operator of a body disposal farm, I think I'm qualified to tell a lie from a headline. That alone gets you in. That alone makes you a contestant on What's the Lie, period. But he goes on. He tells me a joke of the day, or writes me a joke of the day in the email, saying, this is the story of the Wong family. The Wongs grew up in communist China, went to college where they met, fell in love, and got married. Of course, they wanted to have a child, but Mrs. Wong could not conceive. They eventually escaped to the United States, where Mr. Wong got a job, worked hard, and eventually could afford to have Mrs. Wong treated at a fertility clinic. After several months of treatment, Mrs. Wong finally conceived, which made both of them very happy. 9 months later, Mrs. Wong gave birth to the cutest little Chinese boy, and the Wongs were just over the moon happy. Of course, the Wongs named their little boy White. W-I-G-H-T. Because, of course, everyone knows that if you work on it long and hard enough, two Wongs can make a White. He is absolutely a contestant on What's the Lie.
and subscribe to more Blaze Media content at theblaze.com/podcasts.